Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. And happy birthday to the Guggenheim, which opened its doors 61 years ago today. And the museum has reopened with all the current safety precautions. And it might be worth a visit, especially during these crowd-free days. I can tell you, I've been to MoMA. I've been to the High Line. It's kind of great. On today's show, a lot of dance. We'll look at City Center's Fall for Dance programming, and also joining us today, trailblazing ballerina Misty Copeland, the first African-American woman to be promoted to principal dancer in the American Ballet Theater's 75-year history. She has a new kids book called Bunheads, the first in a series of picture books inspired by Misty's own early experiences in ballet. And then later on, we'll hear about the dramatic saga of the workspace sharing company WeWork, once valued at $47 billion, but it wound up being a modern-day money pit. New York Magazine contributing editor Reeves Wideman charts the spectacular rise and fall of WeWork and its CEO Adam Neumann in his new book, Billion Dollar Loser. We have a lot to get to, so let's get this started. All week, as part of our new series called Full Bio, we've been delving into the 614-page book, The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X. The late Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter Les Payne spent almost three decades reporting and talking to the people who knew Malcolm X to give new context to his life and his legacy. Today, we talk to his daughter and chief researcher, Tamara Payne, about one of the biggest revelations in the book, the details of a 1961 meeting with the Ku Klux Klan, where Malcolm X and Atlanta minister Jeremiah Shabazz represented the Nation of Islam. And we find out why this meeting was a turning point for Malcolm, especially when it came to the way he thought about Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad. We'll also hear about his relationship with Martin Luther King Jr. and how both leaders skillfully use the media to advance their messages. But we start with what drew Malcolm to the Nation of Islam in the first place. Malcolm X joined the Nation of Islam while in prison. How was he introduced to it? And what appeal did it hold for him personally?
It was his family. His family joined the Nation of Islam first, starting with Wilfred, who was living in the Detroit area in Michigan. And he was, you know, looking for something to be involved with outside of work. And he kind of came across this this group, Nation of Islam. In fact, it was, well, the odd thing was that an incident happened at his job, and this person was up for getting a raise, and Wilfred went in and went to bat for this person and demanded that this person be paid what he should be paid. And this person was impressed with Wilfred, and he said, "Are you a member of the Nation?" And Wilfred didn't know anything about it. And that's kind of where Wilfred starts to go to the meetings to see what this group is about. And he sees the possibilities, basically. And it's, and again, it's kind of like in childhood of what the rearing that Wilfred and, you know, and their siblings and Malcolm received when they were younger was, when you don't want to be idle, you want to be active, you want to build community. And he wants, and he's interested in doing that. And he tried to go to the local UNIA, you know, group at in the area. And he said the members were older and they really weren't doing anything. But the Nation, they were actually doing things. They were a bit more organized. They were having meetings and they were, you know, he saw the possibilities there. He saw the energy. But the other thing to understand is that the Nation uses a lot of Garveyitism in their organization as far as building businesses, building their community, sticking together. That's you know, that's all Garvey. So it appealed to Wilfred. And Wilfred, you know, wanted to bring the rest of the family in because it was something that they were familiar with because of their upbringing. And he also knew that they could help, you know, they could help the organization.
While he was still in prison, Malcolm wrote to Elijah Muhammad, who had been the leader of the Nation of Islam since the early 30s, and he was known as the Messenger. His predecessor was a man named Fard Muhammad, was the prophet. What kind of questions did Malcolm have as a new member of the Nation of Islam?
His mind, when Malcolm's hearing about the nation, is, you know, he wants to be free. He's in prison. He wants to get out. And, you know, he's restless about that. And so the conversations that he has with his brothers about that, you know, is interesting. When his brother explains to him, you know, that, and he uses the term, the white man's a devil, Malcolm has a problem with that. And they had to actually work on him about that. Because Malcolm believed that through his hustling days, when he was doing these running these errands for, you know, for example, the numbers runners, you know, that he was in charge of this cash and white men who were in charge of the whole operation. They trusted him with it, so they couldn't be all that bad. And the brother's like, no, it's, you were taking a chance for them. But can you imagine the money that they are earning and profiting off of, and if they really valued you, they would have given you a cut, but they didn't. They just trusted you and gave you enough money to be happy for a few days. So that was the thing that Wilfred, you know, Malcolm's oldest brother, said that they really had to work on him on this whole trusting of, you know, the accepting this idea that white men is the devil and how the white man has used black people.
Almost as soon as Malcolm's released from prison in the summer of 52, he goes to Chicago to meet Elijah Muhammad. What was his relationship like with the Messenger in his early years in the Nation of Islam?
He was very grateful. And he saw him as a father figure. You know, right away. He saw him as a savior. Malcolm knew that he needed a place to land, and this was a good place for him to land. It was like an extended, you know, family and something he could grow. He could see himself growing into it and growing with it. So he was very grateful for that.
The members of the Nation of Islam lived by a strict code of personal conduct, which Malcolm lived by and enforced, avoiding pork, alcohol, cigarettes. There was prayer for women. Modesty, especially in clothing, was important. Why did this appeal to Malcolm, given what a free spirit he was as a young boy?
Well, it's the discipline. And Malcolm also became very disciplined after this. He saw what his other ways had gotten him and where that took him. And he did not want to stay on that path. So he wanted another path. And this was a great path for him to be disciplined. But also, it didn't go against his own upbringing, his foundation, the love of his people, building with his people. And it's a group. And you have a lot of people who are working towards the same goal of doing that. That was important to him, and it really enveloped him, and he really wanted to do that. Now, you can join a group like that and find yourself really happy and working with that, and then you can also, you know, you have your ideas of how to make it grow faster, which was what he came up against. You know, that he was so disciplined because not everybody was as disciplined as he was. You know, and we detail that. You know, how that actually started people to talk about him and spread rumors about him. Who does he think he is? He just came here and he's such a big talker. He's bringing all these people that, you know, and Malcolm was also very much interested in not just staying with, I guess what they would call just working class families who weren't very educated, but he was also very interested in bringing people who were on the rise, who were about education, who were going to college, and bringing those people in. And that brought in a lot of, that brought in, you know, some conflict in the organization at that time.
My guest is Tamara Payne. We're talking about The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X. We're sort of in the middle of part three, which details from 1946 to 1963. So he has this rise within the Nation of Islam, like you said, recruiting a lot of people, the organization, different kinds of people to the organization, sort of revitalizing temples that had become stagnant. He becomes a national spokesperson. Did he understand that this made him possibly a target for jealousy or even worse?
Yes, because it started early. You know, as soon as he was in a group, as soon as he had joined the group, there were issues that came up. You know, when he wasn't even a minister yet, but he was recruiting people and people were targeting him and complaining to the Elijah Muhammad, and Elijah Muhammad was saying, well, he's bringing in new people and he's growing the temple. And the people he was staying with, who were working with him also, the husband and wife, you know, Elijah Muhammad asked them, how are you finding working with them? And the husband said, I like it. He's great. He's bringing in these people. He said other people are having problems and they're talking about it in a negative way, as if we're trying to work against the nation, but we're not. And Elijah Muhammad, you know, he told them that if this is what you're doing, this is where everybody should do it. But, you know, but Malcolm had to get, he was sat down because, you know, his discipline, you know, because he wanted everybody to be disciplined and live by the book, and not everybody was willing to do that. And he was very strict about that. And it was, he came against that early on. And he had to face that. And he, you know, he had to talk to Elijah Muhammad. Elijah Muhammad would sit him down, have lots of conversations with him about that. How to relate to the people. And Malcolm was saying, but I just really want this to grow faster. And Elijah Muhammad's like, that's not how it's working with these people. So eventually, you know, he gets sent out to the east, to northeast, and, you know, and it's a better fit there for him.
In the book, there's this incredibly detailed section, and I know we can't get to all of it, but I do want to touch on some of it, about a meeting with the KKK. It's a meeting between the KKK and Malcolm X and the Atlanta Nation of Islam minister Jeremiah X. It took place in the fall of 1961. How much have historians known about this meeting?
It's been mentioned. Malcolm talked about that at the end of his life. He regretted that meeting. People have talked about it, they have mentioned it, but I've never seen details of it. Until, you know, my father spoke with Jeremiah Shabazz and interviewed him. And, you know, he was able to get the details of that meeting, as well as, you know, what the Southern strategy for the Nation of Islam was. I mean, Jeremiah is very important in the nation, too. But as far as details, I had never heard of the details of this meeting before this.
It's amazing. You know, for broad strokes, what was Elijah Muhammad hoping to get out of a meeting with the KKK? And what was Malcolm X hoping to get out of a meeting with the KKK?
I think, again, and the important thing about this book, and I want to just reiterate, is that we need the context of what's going on at the time. We're 1961 in Georgia. Martin Luther King and the Southern Christian Leadership Conferences, you know, they're doing their thing. And CORE is also, you know, there are civil rights organizations that are, you know, they're organizing against segregation. The Klan is pro-segregation. The Nation of Islam's, their position is, you know, they just want to be separate. They don't want to be, they want a separate state. And if you got, and they want a separate state with access to water, and they want to have their own farms. And in order to do that, you're not going to do that in the Northeast, but in the South is probably the best place to do that. So, you know, Elijah Muhammad felt that, you know, they wanted to get land, and in order to do that, if the Klan was going to help them get the land, but at least, you know, not get in the way of them getting their land, you know. And they weren't asking for land for free. They were willing to pay for it, but they're saying, don't, you know, don't harass our people when they're trying to do this. Don't do anything to us, terrible things to us when we own the land, you know, and we want to be separate. And for, you know, that's what Elijah Muhammad was looking. He wanted to, one, have a way to get the land for the separate state, to start setting that up, and also to find a way to work, negotiate with the Klan so that their members could move around the South without being harassed by Klan members. And so he was trying to negotiate that. Malcolm didn't like the idea, obviously, of having this discussion even. And he did not feel good about having, I mean, he didn't like having this kind of plea, you know, bargaining with the Nation. He didn't think that was an unholy alliance in his view. Obviously, from his family, his upbringing, his, you know, the Klan visited his family when he was in utero. The Klan burnt, you know, white supremacists, you know, burned down their house and when they were in Lansing. So he doesn't have good feelings about this at all, but he's not the leader of the Nation of Islam. So he has to take orders. And so he's going to, you know, he's going to work his way through that with Jeremiah Shabazz, see what comes out of this.
Was that a turning point for him within the Nation of Islam? That meeting?
Yeah. Definitely. You know, it's clear that Malcolm did not feel good about going to this meeting, except that he wanted to be a part. Yes, he did want to be a part of the meeting because it is a Klan, but he kind of more wanted to have a face off with them, you know. He wanted to tell them where to go. But he didn't do that. The orders were not to do that. So now he had to find another way of doing it and maybe take shots, I guess, you know, and I don't want to minimize that. I mean, this meeting is important to see the personalities and how Malcolm maneuvers this, I think is brilliant. I think it definitely sets up, you know, it starts to tear at Malcolm, you know, about Elijah Muhammad. And he wants to take action. He starts to see that, you know, Elijah Muhammad is not going to do that. And that frustrates him. But this is kind of the beginning of that.
So as part three rounds out, we get we start to get a window into Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. and the culture around civil rights at the time. And this is from page 327. Says, despite Malcolm's aggressive nationwide promotion of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as the enfant terrible of Negro liberation, it was Reverend King who caught the fancy of the Negro masses, and he struck fear and loathing in the hearts of white Southerners and even the murderous Klan. Did Malcolm X view Martin Luther King as a rival?
Earlier on, there is, because he was more about self-defense in that he was in opposition to the peaceful protesters. What he's starting to do in this chapter is, and to me, this is one of my favorite chapters of the book, of talking about the Martin, Malcolm, the media, is that he's starting to say, where I'm really an option. So it's like, you should negotiate with Martin Luther King, because the option is you'll have to deal with me, and I'm not about to turn the other cheek. I'm going to stand up, you know. And so, you know, white America, you should negotiate with Martin Luther King. But in the beginning, you know, I think it, you know, he did see them as in opposition. But I think as time grew, especially after, you know, meeting with the Klan, seeing what's going on around the country, he really sees them more as choices to the same goal. There are two different ways of approaching the goal for Black, you know, for the civil rights struggle, right? And yeah, so you see that evolution happening in the chapter. And the other thing that's brilliant about the chapter is the when you're looking at the media, because during this time, television, you know, opens up, and Malcolm and Martin being on television, and this whole idea of how they're able to use this medium, you know, to promote their, you know, their programs is very interesting. How Malcolm does that in creating sound bites, the way he's looking into the camera. Both of them use it differently, but it's really interesting way of looking at what was going on at that time, and it provides a real context for that.
You were listening to my conversation with Tamara Payne, who worked with her late father, Les Payne, on The Dead Are Arising, The Life of Malcolm X.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.